The term Holy of Holies does not appear anywhere in the King James Bible. The word Messiah does not appear in the
Wait a second. Messiah nor Holy of Holies appear in the King James Bible?
Correct.
So you're so what you're kind of getting at here is the end of times has triggered Satan to make these changes to the Bible in which to confuse man, is what you're...
Yeah.
Howdy, folks. The ghost of Robert Stack here. I used to haunt Double J's nightmares, and now I have hijacked his podcast. Hawks of the Interwebs, welcome to another Shenanigan-infused journey into the mind of this particular garbage can dude. Cam at you life slash recorded from a studio slash spare bedroom, deep in the foothills of Appalachia, directly from the number one drug overdose death capital of America, per capita of course, on Toadie's Operation GCD adventure. Double J is honored to be joined by John Kerwin, author of The Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide, a brilliant book covering the trials and tribulations in the journey of the truther, or conspiracy theorist. Double J and John discuss various topics from his book, and Double J even peppers in a few conspiracy theories of his own, relative to the ideas outlined in John's book. Also discussed are John's theories of the mystery known as the Mandela Effect, as it relates to the Bible. The idea that legendary Bible verses are indeed being altered by some hidden hand of the universe. Lastly, Double J and John discuss the notion that we may indeed reside in a simulated universe of sorts, and they discuss the implications of such a reality. And if you folks of the interwebs have not listened to John's first appearance on Operation GCD, I highly recommend you go back and listen to that podcast first. Anyhow, folks of the interwebs, thank you again for joining us today to get a little GCD. You can locate all links for the host, Double J, and guest John Kerwin in the show notes. Enjoy the podcast with your host, Double J, and author John Kerwin.
William! I've seen a lot of sights and traveled many miles, shook a thousand hands and seen my share of smiles. I've caused some great concern and told one too many lies, and now I see the world through these subtle jaded eyes. So what if I threw a party and all my friends are there? Acquaintances, relatives, the girls who never care. You'll have a host of rowdy hooligans and a big light at the door. Chief Wells and Barney Orr, and invite the Flanagans. Replace the window you smashed down and apologize to Sluggo for pissing on his couch. I'll see Mrs. McGolliff and so many others soon. I'll say I'm sorry for what I did, sleepwalking in her room.
John Kerwin, welcome back to Operation GCD. Thanks again for joining me here today to get a little GCD.
Yep.
Author of the Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide, great theories into the Mandela Effect and simulation theory as a whole, especially relative to the Bible. Can't wait to get into these topics today. So, John, by all means, please please kick us off here with some of those topics.
Great to be back with you, JJ. I'm looking forward to just in our pre-talk, you know, talking about all this different stuff. I'm like, are we recording this? Because this is really cool, you know? So it's going to be cool. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
No, it's awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed the last conversation. Got some great feedback from the folks of the interwebs, and looking forward to getting to some more of these strange and anomalous topics that I would classify these sort of topics under the age of censorship, topics that folks don't want other folks talking about.
Yeah, and that, you know, just to plug the book, I mean, that's what the book's
about. Oh, by all means, please do.
It's really a tough journey that we're on, because, you know, we start finding out all this crazy stuff. I mean, let's be honest, it's crazy. Plus, most of it's bad news. You know, the deep staters are all Luciferian gangsters. They're like blood drinking Luciferian mobsters, you know. They want to bleed us dry while they kill us, kill us.
It sounds almost like you're speaking in some sort of hyperbole there, but honestly, like, the more days that pass, the more that seems like you're spot on target with your analysis there, John. In fact, relative to kind of that topic this morning, I was discussing with Nick, the host of the New York Patriot, host of the Occult Rejects podcast and Spiritual Gangsters. He's got a whole series of podcasts over there.
Yeah. I did a thing with him.
Okay. Well, yeah. Great stuff. You definitely check out, any folks at the Interwest would check him out too. He's always putting out some great occult materials over there, occult related materials, kind of uncovering some of those concepts. But he and I were back and forth this morning communicating in regards to a series we had been covering on cults, one of the topics I like to cover here on Operation GCD, cults. I'm a cult escapee myself from the Mormon religion early on in my life. And so, you know, it's a topic that's long interested me, but specifically ancient alien cargo cults, which there's a lot of those type of varieties. This one in specific was run by a man who's in prison for the next 150 years for diddling kids, a guy by the name of Dwight York. But his ancient alien cargo cult was very prominent in the rap and hip hop community, whereas I'm discovering more and more of these large, you know, famous musical acts within the hip hop and rap community all pay homage to this man, Dwight York, the leader of this cult, despite the fact he's been in prison for almost, well, he has been in prison for almost 20 years. We'll call it 19. So they're still, to this day, still venerating this person. So when you say that they're satanic, you know, child, you know, elite over, quote unquote, overlords. I mean, I don't think, again, I think that's a spot on analysis. We have nearly every major rap and hip hop act for the existence of rap and hip hop from day one. They've all been venerating this dude who has been in prison for the last almost 20 years for running this cult and diddling kids and all sorts of other, you know, flagrant felonious activities. And, you know, again, when I say most prominent rappers in hip hop, Jay-Z would fall in this category. The band Outkast, you know, Wesley Snipes was a major financier. The actor was a major financier of this cult. So just to give you a quick tangential, you know, side note here, John, to support your statement, I don't think you're very far off with the fact what these elite echelon of people maintain their in their social circles and activities.
Well, I've been hearing that their adrenochrome supplies are getting shut off, and I just saw a picture of a bunch of them side by side. Celine Dion, what's the blonde chick that has the talk show? Ellen DeGeneres. They look like 40 years older all of a sudden.
They need to get on that share program, whatever she's, or Martha Stewart, whatever those two are. Ooh, on there.
Oh, baby. So, I mean, that is the nectar of the elite, man, is the adrenochrome. But
I know, you know what? And that's another good example of a topic that even 5 years ago seemed Looney Tunes as could be. But as the days progress, seems more and more like an actual reality. Because, you know, I recently saw a clip on the Twixter, the X, formerly known as Twitter, where there was a montage of movies over the last 30 years that had depicted something about adrenochrome. And I was, you know, I just thought that was funny.
Yeah.
You know, the more time goes by here at a rapid pace, these things are becoming to the surface. And yeah, I think, I mean, I'll be honest with you, 2 years ago, I wasn't even really convinced on adrenochrome, but the more time goes by, more information available, it seems like there's something to it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they do it. It releases a bunch of adrenaline into the bloodstream when they're being tortured, and then they draw that out, and you know, only the super rich can afford it. But I mean, these guys all die at 100. Rockefeller lived to be 100. Who lives to be 100?
Sure.
They look phenomenal too. I remember one person sat next to David Bowie on a plane, and the one thing they said is his skin was like the skin of a baby.
Oh, that's a whole different conspiracy theory with Bowie. If you want me to dive into that one real fast.
Oh yeah.
I'm not convinced he died.
Is a simulant?
No, I think he faked his death, because there's a dude who went on, like, CNN, I think it was, who's supposed to be like Bowie's friend or manager or something like that. It's clearly David Bowie in a mask, some like, you know, Hollywood makeup on. You know, there's no question about it. It's like he's a very unique looking and sounding character. It's like Michael Jackson when he faked his death and went on CNN dressed as, you know, that burn victim.
Remember that? He showed up at his own funeral too.
Yeah. Oh, they got all sorts of pictures.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Well, why not? You've been diddling the kids, you know. You probably should go underground. I don't know what the plan is with a lot of these guys. I saw Jack Black and a couple of other Hollywood A-listers say, sort of on the side in an interview, that if you go against this elite, then they just kill you and clone you. They said that in interviews.
That's interesting.
So cloning is definite. I mean, come on, guys. They cloned Dolly the sheep back in the 70s or whatever.
Oh, well, yeah. Nazis invented cloning in like 1902.
Right. You don't think if they can clone a sheep that they can clone a person, and that they would in the underground basis? And we know that Biden isn't the real Biden. You know, he's got a mask on. He doesn't look anything like the guy that you look at from the 80s and 90s. It's a different person. But there's a lot of
or somebody's had a massive amount of facial reconstructive surgery because something's going on with dude's ear and like by his neckline where you would have if you did a bunch of like facial lifts and stuff.
Well, there's one video of him from the back where you could see the mask is all crumpled up on his
neck. Really?
It's so obvious. Yeah. And they're hyper realistic masks. I've seen people put them on and take them off.
Oh, yeah.
They look exactly like the person.
Well, there's a famous, before I comment on that, John, if I just may qualify my Nazi 1902 statement. Any German scientist that's doing human genetic experiments, I don't care if it's the 1940s or 1902, you're a Nazi scientist, in my opinion. To make it easier in life, I kind of put them all in the same bucket. You're doing human genetic experiments, you're a German scientist in the early part of the 20th century, you're a Nazi. Anyway, but so in regards to you were just mentioning, I've forgotten that. What did you just mention? Well, I went back on my Nazi tangent.
The masks and the people that we see on the TV aren't really, and there's pretty decent intel that the Trump that we're looking at now isn't the real Trump. Well, the real Trump was taken away to a military base, according to Benjamin Fulford and some other, what I call good news truthers, because they were going to assassinate him after they stole the election. And the real Trump, the Trump that we're seeing is got white. He's got like white under his eyes and he's bigger.
Yep.
And it's hard to believe because they look and sound so the same. But if you clone people or if it's a body double, there was like five different Hillary Clintons.
There's definitely a lot of those. Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. It's so obvious. So we know something's up. What's hard to like piece together is, okay, let's say they take the real Trumps out and they put a fake Trump in so that the deep state is able to continue to control the narrative. So that would explain a lot of things. Why Trump doubled down on the vax, right? Because they give you enough of being a good guy to keep the patriots in line following him. But he's really now he is really a shill. Right.
Well, the question I think then becomes, if they're doing it once and replacing these people, why is it not an ongoing battle between two sides of continuing replacing these people?
That's right. It's so twisted. Yeah. What I tell folks is like whatever you see on the TV or whatever, the data sphere, there's always like five levels of truth behind what you're seeing. And you have to sort of pick a level.
For instance, absolutely.
I remember when I was like a new truther. And I was listening to Rush Limbaugh back then. Okay, so Rush is just operating at this one geopolitical level, politics, pure. But then I found Alex Jones. So now he's introducing the concepts of the globalists and Luciferianism and, you know, bizarre things like chemtrails, underground bases. I mean, he was opening me up to a whole world of things Rush Limbaugh certainly isn't talking about. But then there's other people that then go higher, like Benjamin Fulford talks a lot about the 13 families,
sure,
the P3 Masons. In fact, it's
the
sort P2 of like
Lodge, the Italy conspiracy.
Yeah.
Propaganda Douay.
We know like
that
the government
Nazis and CIA. That was definitely an international scandal of epic proportions.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with Benjamin Fulford's work. I'll have to check out some of his stuff. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, if you go to Rumble, you can pull him up easily. He's got little 15-minute things, like once a week. They're pretty cool.
I'll definitely check that out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for people to reference if they want
to.
If I may, real quick, John, in regards to I'm not a good person unless you want to get into the more fake celebrity desk to discuss Rush Limbaugh or Alex Jones, because I'm honestly of the opinion that Rush Limbaugh is Jim Morrison. And Alex Jones is actually Bill Hicks. So.
Yeah, I'm not endorsing
them. Those details. I'm willing to talk to them. Outside of that, I don't have great favor of their opinions.
No, I'm not endorsing them or the white hat, black hat scenario. And these are just narratives.
Yeah,
and
no,
it's part of my journey, you know, where I was kind of discovering, you know, layers of the onion as we wake up.
Yeah.
We keep waking up. And right at this moment, you think you are awake. And there's about 15 other rabbit holes that you don't even know about yet. I just did a talk.
I may have just proved a point right there by dropping the Bill Hicks, Alex Jones comment on you. you didn't look like you were familiar with the reaction you had.
Oh, yeah. Hearing. No, I've looked into the Bill Hicks thing. Okay. And my response is I don't really care if he's a shill or if he's fake. The guy is super genius, knowledgeable. I mean, he's Google on history, and he has incredible guests. He has a whole staff of reporters, and I go over there every day, and I don't care if he doesn't believe the Earth is flat or the moon landing is fake or whatever his agenda is. Okay, I can figure out when he's leading me astray based on my worldview, but I don't have the luxury of only listening to people that perfectly align with my worldview, right?
I don't think anyone would, if anyone would operate under those terms, then we would never find anyone to listen to.
So the fact that he's a shill is good to know, but it doesn't mean I don't listen to him.
No, that's a solid point. I just like to joke on the fact that Bill Hicks is Alex Jones. And one of the things that Bill Hicks said before he allegedly died was he was working on a character for a TV show or film. I don't recall. There's a quote, and it's readily available on the interwebs, and I'll post in the show notes. He was working on a character for a TV show or film, and the character was based on Rush Limbaugh and Alex Jones.
Nice.
They knew each other. Bill Hicks and Alex Jones documented knew each other in person. Their manager is the same person. Alex, the creepiest part to me is Alex Jones. I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I like to bash Alex Jones whenever possible. Alex Jones jokes around with his manager, who was Bill Hicks' childhood best friend, and they joke around about how he looks like Bill Hicks, and and they do it on the air. Like, it's really creepy. But yeah, and then in regards to Jim Morrison, he was a big part of the Laurel Canyon kind of CIA military intelligence created counterculture of the 1960s. Are you familiar with that storyline from mm-hmm. David Cowan's book?
Mm-hmm.
Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon. So I think Morrison just went on to do exactly what he said live on TV in 1967, that he wished he could just disappear into corporate America.
Yeah. Well,
he did precisely that, in my opinion. If you take a picture from Morrison months before he died, he was just as fat as Rush Limbaugh, because that's how fat he had gotten. They look. I'd like to play a game where I send people a picture of Jim Morrison 2 months, 3 months before he died, and ask them, is this a young Jim Morrison, or is this Jim Morrison or a young Rush Limbaugh? Because it would have been about 6 or 7 years before Limbaugh became on the airwaves in the late 70s. I think it was his official entrance into political, radio. But anyway, almost without fail, everyone tells me that that's Rush Limbaugh, when in fact no question, it's a Jim Morrison photograph. And on top of that, Jim Morrison famously used a gold microphone, the same model gold microphone that Rush Limbaugh used. Just saying.
I'm open to just about anything at this point.
What's that? I'm sorry to interrupt you there, John.
I'm so freaked out by the things I'm learning. I mean, every day I come up against another mind-bending, gut-punch reality, like the fake history.
Oh, that's really a big one right now, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're being led around by the nose, but the evidence is there in the data sphere. If it's just the unveiling of humanity,
it's the apocalypse, right? You mentioned these layers. We're talking about you're finding new layers every day. I'm finding some new layers here and there, especially in regards to the alternative histories. That's a big topic. I like to research it. Especially relative to mounds in America and around the world, the ancient mm-hmm. structures. Anyway,
we talked about in the pre-show, we were gonna try to wade into the simulation theory, because that's on a lot of minds of people. Well, and I'm coming from a biblical worldview, so I was going to try to, kind of share with your audience what I've discovered as far as what this narrative is on this topic, because I did a talk on it called The Simulation Theory or the Bible.
No, it's great. And I think that's another layer right there. When you're talking layers, I mean, you try to convince some people that the machinations of the universe as they see it are not concrete or solid as they would like them to be. That's a whole new layer for a lot of folks.
Right. And that also then plays into the Mandela effect, which is the main lane that I'm in. The biblical analysis of the Mandela effect is what I've been doing for the last 7 years.
No, that's great. And just if I may add one comment there on our previous on our previous portion of this conversation here, John, the masks you were talking about, and I'll put a link in the show notes. There's a famous article from the 90s where I think it was Washington Post or something like this published it. It was the CIA's director of, you know, makeup and masks, whatever department of the CIA that does that. I forget the technical services or whatever it's called. And she's sitting in the Oval Office with George Bush, number one, when he was president. I believe it was when he was president. I think it was published after his presidency, but so the photograph would have been more like 89 than I guess we'll call it. And she's wearing a mask. He has no idea that it's this lady. It was, you know, a very lifelike mask, very convincing. So, and this is the CIA director, a lifelong CIA guy sitting next to this woman who's doesn't know that she's wearing a mask while he's getting briefed by her. So, and there's photographs of her taking off the mask and stuff in the Oval Office. So, I mean, she does, I think now that she's retired, she does conversations like TED Talk style stuff about the CIA's mask game. So when you're mentioning masks again, that's a layer that people don't want to really comprehend, I think, at times, but by all means, the evidence has been in our face for decades that it not only does it exist, it existed 30 years ago in a very convincing fashion to convince the former CIA director, then president, that, you know, trick him about the whole, you know, mask situation. I think the general public is going to fall for a lot more mask tricks than that guy was. So yeah, it's another layer of our current, you know, unveiling of the apocalypse, unveiling of information, I think, that we're all experiencing here in 2024, meme world 2024. What was once a meme is now reality.
Yep.
But yeah, let's definitely get into some of the simulation stuff. I'm excited to talk about that, John. It sounded like you had a very interesting conference that you spoke at there in Massachusetts.
Right. So I went up to Massachusetts. I was a speaker at the International Mandela Effect Conference. And I was able to meet quite a few of the leaders in intelligentsia in that world. Because essentially, the simulation theory has been popularized by people that do not have a biblical worldview.
Sure.
And okay, and so it's
probably overwhelmingly atheist, right?
Well, it's not necessarily atheist, but they don't have a biblical worldview. That's the way I characterize it. There's two types of people in the world, in my view. Those that believe the Bible and those that don't. Yep. Those that have accepted the teachings of Scripture, the veracity, the accuracy, and the authority of Scripture, and those that don't. I don't care what your questions are. I got questions myself. But I have chosen, based on the empirical evidence that I have, that the Scriptures are inspired by God and they're sufficient for me to be convinced that the biblical worldview is accurate.
I like the way you've categorized that, John. So what you're saying is you've basically boiled it down to a greatest common denominator. You either believe the worldview as the Bible tells it, or you don't. And I like that. Operation GCD may not only be garbage can do it, it's also greatest common denominator, because that's how I break everything down when I analyze things as well. I try to make it as simple as possible.
Yeah. So with that being said, when I went there, I was pretty much singularly the only one with a biblical worldview, but I was well received and I had meals with everybody. We had a great time, but sure. I had a chance to meet like Tom Campbell. He came in remotely, but I spoke to him directly. And my first question was, if we're in a simulation, in your narrative, does the simulation have a creator? Because basically the narrative is that it was described by Elon Musk initially like this. Remember when we had Pong, the video game, how basic it was? Now look at the games we have, how realistic they are. And this is what he says. Well, based on that development, it's possible that an advanced race could have a video game that's so advanced that we could be in one right now and not know it. Therefore, we are probably in one.
And that's kind of the idea of Nicholas Bostrom from Cambridge, correct? Is he from Cambridge University?
Okay, but that reasoning is extremely flawed, and it's a huge leap of faith. There's no evidence at all to support that you live in a simulation created by someone. Okay, because here's what I asked next. I said, okay, well, if we're in a machine, it's like a technology. This is a concept. The simulation in that narrative is some sort of technological device that is creating the reality that you're experiencing. I said, okay, well, does the device have a creator? The answer was yes. Tom Campbell, all the people said, yes, it has a creator. So then my next question was, well, who is it?
Yep.
The answer? I don't know.
Yep.
So my next statement was, okay, well, that's a religion.
The grand architect, probably, for a lot of them. Right?
Well, the two primary candidates are an advanced race of aliens or a consciousness cloud that evolved over eons.
Okay.
Those are two options.
So a self-sustaining consciousness, like consciousness that is like permeates the entire planet or, you know, world kind of deal?
Well, yeah, that non-biblical worldview tends to drift towards what we heard in the Garden of Eden.
Okay.
Where we have this narrative where the serpent is telling Eve, God doesn't want you to eat because then you'll know everything and you'll be like him. You'll be like God. Okay, so the Gnostic, I don't want to use the term New Age because it's derogatory. I use the term non-biblical.
Yep.
That worldview has a concept that you are God, I am God, and we all become God. Well,
that's the Mormon worldview. I'm familiar with that. It's very Gnostic.
All right. So what the Bible teaches, though, is that God is distinctly separate from us. He says, I am God, and besides me, there is no other. Plus, he has no beginning. You have an inception date. So you're a created finite being where your soul spirit has an inception date. Now, if the Bible's true, then your spirit does live forever, but you do have a date where you started, where God doesn't.
Sure.
Aliens are also have an inception date. Aliens are not eternal and have no beginning.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, I cannot die and get my own planet near the solar system Kolob.
Correct.
To live near God. That's never going to happen, right?
Not according to the Bible. No, according to Joseph
Smith. That's the Mormon theology. When you bring in aliens, I have to go back to the Mormon theology. So, yeah, I know what you mean, though. There is – so when you get down to the brass tacks of all these simulation theories, it's either – they're like people don't like to tackle that idea of who is the creator is what you're saying.
Well, what I do is I list it along with the monkey to the man, which was put in front of all of us when we were kindergarten. And it shows the monkey getting taller and taller, and then there's a guy. And that's to get you to believe that you evolved and that there is no creator. So it gets you to deny God. The same is true with NASA fooling us that we're on a spinning ball. Because if you're an insignificant speck in a sea of galaxies, you have a much different feeling than if you find out the Earth is flat and stationary with a dome over it, and there is no galaxies. This is all there is. The stars are not what we've been told. It's not Star Trek with people flying all over and, you know, light years and stuff. It's not like that, according to all of the evidence and the scriptures.
Sure.
So it's a closed system where the Earth is his footstool, and now it's a much more intimate sense of knowing him. A lot of people are getting saved through. Right? Are we good?
I lost your audio there for a second.
Lost something. Recorded.
I said 7. Nobody's coming up with 6. Who works out in 6 minutes? You won't even get your heart going, not even a mouse on a wheel. 7's the key number here. Think about it. Right. 7 elevens?
Yeah.
7 dwarfs? 7, man, that's the number. 7 chipmunks twirling on a branch, eating lots of sunflowers on my uncle's ranch. You know that old children's tale from the sea?
No aliens have a start date. Humans have a start date.
Oh, yeah. So basically what I said was, okay, well, if you don't know who the creator of the machine is, then that's a religion. You have a faith that what you're saying is true. You don't know it's true. And then
that's, you don't want to tell that to an atheist, though, John. That's a red flag for them when you start claiming that their worldview is or these non-biblical views is a religion. That's a they get immediately off put by those statements. I know from experience, my brother is a philosophy professor who has no intentions of simulation theory. He has no perceptions of in these kind of faiths or whatever, even though I point out to him that his non-faith is a faith. I mean, these aren't things that those folks like to hear.
No, and I don't really care, because I've watched the great atheists cornered on the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually believe that this cosmic egg somehow created itself.
Sure.
And then blew up. So nothing created everything?
That's Absolutely. I like the way Rupert Sheldrake puts it, the biologist there from, I believe he's also from Cambridge. He likes to say that, or Oxford, he likes to say that, give me one miracle, I'll give you the entire universe. That's how he kind of frames it for the atheists, these Big Bang Theory
people. Yeah.
You know? Because they, just like you mentioned with the simulation theory, there's no one has a good answer on creator. They never have a good answer on what caused the bang. It's just, it was a bang. So, like, give me this one miracle bang, and I'll give you the entire universe. Yeah. They never have an explanation for cause of the Big Bang.
If you study it, when they first came out with this, they said that their studies proved that the cosmic egg was like 50 light years across. Well, I guess they started thinking about it, and they're like, that's kind of sketch. Like, how does the 50 light year thing disappear? So they shrank it. So then it was 10 light years. Then it was 1 light year. Then it was whatever. And now.
And since no one knows what a light year is, I mean, they could just do anything.
So now it's just a pea-sized thing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's worse, because now you've got this pea-sized thing blows up and then creates all of the galaxies. Come on.
Yeah.
And you look down your nose at me because I believe there's a God?
All right. No, that's exactly right. I know exactly what you mean. I've been involved in those precise conversations.
Yeah. And now I got this book. It's called Math Proves the Holy Bible. This is, okay. I don't know why I never heard of this before. This book nails it. Like, forget about it. This guy was a PhD around the 1890s, and he got born again, and he started looking into the scriptures. And if you understand Greek and Hebrew, their letters also correspond to numbers. So in our language, we have letters and numbers. Well, Greek, it's both. And right. So that means a letter has a numerical value. A word has a numerical value, a sentence, a paragraph, et cetera.
Isn't that all that's all gematria is some of those concepts?
It's similar. It's simpler than that. Basically, God's really into the number seven. He loves the number seven. Okay. So what he did, God, was he – now, this is not the Bible code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is codes that are found in the scripture based on the number seven that are statistically impossible to the nth degree. Okay,
because so these are words within the Bible that the numerical value of those words
– right, so he calls them a – Hold on. Let me get the book. It's right next to me. Hold on one second. Okay. The book is called Mathematics Proves Holy Scriptures by, who is it by? Carl Sabiers, S-A-B-I-E-R-S. Now, that's not the name of the guy. The guy lived around the 1800s, and he has 42,000 pages of these.
Holy smokes.
All right. And so it was his life's work. It took him 50 years to get them all. And one example is like the fifth chapter of Matthew is a genealogy. And so he goes through these things and he finds features. That's what he calls them. So there's a if God loves the number seven, right? So there's a 1 in 7 chance that the word is going to end up being divisible by seven. And the sentence will be divisible by seven in the paragraph. And so he'll find like 17 features in one paragraph. All the nouns are divisible by seven. All the words starting with R are divisible by seven. All the sentences individually divisible by seven. And after a while, you know, if you understand probabilities, it is a fixed quantity. It's not open. It's not subjective at all. And he explains that. And so like if you had to sit down and write a genealogy that was 20 people, mm-hmm. Harry gave birth to Joe, bum, 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 right? And then you were given 24 rules when you wrote the genealogy where you say, all right, all the sentences have to be divisible by 7. All the nouns have to be, you count up all the nouns, they all have to be divisible by 7.
Mm-hmm.
You would, there's no way, even with a supercomputer, you could probably couldn't do it.
It would definitely take a supercomputer, I think. Yeah, I don't think any human's doing that.
And so some of them have 24. It's like 150 quintillion, 453 quadrillion, blah, 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 to one that it happened by chance.
Sure.
Okay, no, so I'm sitting back.
I can buy here. That number. That seems like it's impossible. So.
Yeah. So I got the world biblical worldview. You could look down your nose at me if you want. Because I'm like a hayseed hick, and there's all these, you got all these high sounding arguments why the Bible isn't true. Okay. Yep. However, I met Jesus Christ in 1983. He walked off the pages of that book into my heart and instantly changed me overnight. And I've been walking with him for 40 years. So a man with an experience is not at the mercy of a man with an argument.
That's a good point.
I had all my questions for God too. One of them was hell, where God, you know, I was in the ministry full time for 10 years from the age of 24 to about 34.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period of time, I studied the Bible 3 to 4 hours a day for like a decade because I had a lot of time on my hands. And one of the things I did was I studied the doctrine of hell. Does the Bible teach that impenitent sinners go to a place where they burn in fire? The answer is yes. You can reject it or you can accept it, but you can't say it doesn't teach that.
Interesting. Okay.
Not to me anyway. Okay. And so.
If I might add, the Mormons don't have a hell. They just have a lower degree of heaven.
Yes. Yes. All right. So for 2 years, though, I had one prayer for God. And I would go and worship God and stuff, but I had one prayer. How could you send people, you know, that aren't like Hitler? They're just, they haven't bowed their knee to Jesus Christ. They're going to burn in literal fire. I was ticked. For 2 years, I was praying one thing. I don't understand hell, and it's really a crisis of my faith because it seems unjust. You don't send a guy to jail for 30 years because he stole a Snickers bar. That was my impression. Because burning is the most exquisite pain that anybody can experience. So finally, one day, after 2 years of questioning this, I'm walking back into the field where I was praying, and the Holy Spirit came on me. Bam! Doubled me over. And I heard the voice of God say, do you have any other questions before you'd be ready to follow me? That was his answer.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I understood. And out from the depths of my being came these words, I'm free! And so, my friend, if you're listening to me, the answer to all your questions about God is there is no answer. It's a take it or leave it offer. The only one that's given you an invitation to eternal life, it's not a consciousness cloud. It's Jesus Christ, the King of Glory. He will walk off the pages of that imperfect book with all your questions. He'll walk into your heart and he will change you. And he will write your name in the Lamb's Book of Life. He's the only one that's offering you eternal life. So you need to just go into your room and just say his name. Jesus, what this guy's saying is true. He's got the math backing it up. All right, I'll give it a shot. Open your mouth and say his name and let him come in and you watch. He will answer that prayer, bro.
Nice. No, that's well put.
Yep.
Yeah, I like this idea of the consciousness cloud and the aspect in regards to the fact that this seems to be how humanity's always attempted to explain the universe is through.
Yeah.
Current incarnation of technology, whether it's the ancient Greeks and a clock, when they said the universe is like a clock, or the current, you know, science folks are claiming that it's like a, you know, a computer cloud-based technology type of deal. You know what I mean? That's what I'm getting from this consciousness cloud situation you're describing.
Right, because I looked at all of the primary arguments for this simulation.
Mm.
The Mandela effect was one that they point to as a proof that we're in a simulation. Well, that's not proof. In other words, all of the proofs that they offer on the non-biblical world narrative can be applied to the biblical narrative. In other words, my viewpoint is that we are in a simulation, but the creator isn't an alien or a consciousness cloud. It's God. Mm-hmm. And you're just getting a peek behind the curtain of how the quantum realm works. But it doesn't mean that you don't have a God. It just means that he's the one that created it, not the aliens.
That's no, I definitely, yeah, I'm tracking. I like that idea. And
yeah,
if I may add one comment on piggyback on your previous statements regarding the numbers of God's numbers in the number seven, parent veneration for the number seven. So what if I understand you correctly, God was a big fan of Mickey Mantle then. Is that what you're telling me?
Why? Because he was number seven. I don't see him being a fan of Mickey Mantle, but there could be some significance there.
Not a fan of baseball, is he?
I don't think so. Sometimes it's hard to tell what actually gives a thrill to God, because he does include himself, concern himself. Like he says, every hair on your head is numbered. So he's not like this really far away God. He gets real up in your grill.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this idea of simulation theory being described in technological fashions, I'm not surprised by some of the limitations in the explanation with that, because it's obviously going to be limited by, you know, like you're pointing out, that no one wants to acknowledge that somebody created that whatever technological simulation they're trying to decipher or trying to appropriate on the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, I think in many respects that there is probably a lot more logical reasoning in the biblical explanations of simulation theory versus some of the scientific explanations of simulation theory.
Yeah.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Like I found out, they don't really have a lot of empirical evidence. Like I said in the beginning, when Elon basically got the ball rolling, when he came out, and all he said was, okay, you got Pong, and now you got super, you know, realistic video games. And then he makes this huge leap of faith. Since we have seen our video games develop so much in a short period of time, it's possible that an alien race who's been around for millions of years could create a simulation so complex that it would be like what we're experiencing. Therefore, we're probably in one. And I'm like, really? Really?
That was actually the idea of Nicholas Bostrom. I think he's won a Nobel Prize on something for philosophy, maybe for that idea in the 90s. And but if you look at it, though, I mean, really, these ideas of the simulation theory kind of go back even 100 years to the concepts of, you know, the Copenhagen conference and what that and the interpretations of quantum physics that kind of began around that time. And it kind of built into these modern day incarnations of, you know, Bostrom or Elon Musk's interpretation of these things. You know, so yeah. That's one kind of historical trend of scientific thinking on the matter. But where does the biblical thinking on the matter go with some of these concepts?
Well, you know, it's just the same story. That's, you know, we weren't created from evolution and we don't live on a spinning ball. And the simulation theory isn't created by aliens. It's all designed to get you to deny the existence of God, which really requires intellectual suicide. I think atheists are the smartest dumb people I've ever met, because you know they've had to abandon evolution, because evolution is so preposterously impossible, and all the archaeological strata doesn't support evolution. It supports creationism, and I've seen.
It's actually the exact opposite of evolution. I think evolution was brought on, if I may interject here, John.
Yeah.
Evolution was interjected into our West, especially our Western societies, because at that very same time, colonial America was spreading out and all these towns across America, the colonists were, you know, the early settlers of America, they were all digging up these mounds. And inside these mounds, they were discovering giant human skeletons. There's thousands of accounts of these colonists, not even the Smithsonian accounts, the colonist accounts. From town histories of where these mounds were, you know, unearthed the mounds and discovered giant skeletons, and those giant human skeletons fly in the face of Darwinian evolution.
Absolutely, in the biblical narrative, the Bible references giants 18 times.
Well, that was my next question for you. Where do the giant human skeletons fall within the biblical worldview?
Well, Genesis 6 gives us a little vignette into where they came from, because it says the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were fair, and they took from them wives, whichever they chose. So apparently, part of the deal with the fallen angels, where Satan deceives one third of them and they are all swept out of heaven, they come down and they're like, you know, college kids on Friday night at the hamburger place, schooling for Finn, you know, and they go in and they say, whoa, you know, 800,000 years of celibacy is really wearing a little thin here. Let's jam on some of this. And they just start taking human women and mating with them.
So is Nephilim Rumspringa for the Nephilim?
Right. So then what the Bible clearly says is that gave birth to giants.
Yeah, yeah.
So the whole demigod narrative with the Greek gods and the demigods is real.
Sure.
They're just a makeover, you know, a retread of the real thing. So then those guys, you know, roam around and they're all the Hittites and the Jebusites and all those dudes in the Old Testament were all Nephilim blood. And that's,
well, that's
where,
interesting you mentioned that. I've actually covered the Hittites a lot relatively.
Yeah. So then the flood was God's do-over on, because all basically the narrative is all the humanity had been corrupted by the DNA tinkering. They were tinkering with DNA back then.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't ancient times. It was all kinds of advanced civilization. Like, you know, the whole history is ass backwards. So
that's for
they,
sure.
Because what it says about Noah is that he was perfect in his genealogies. Mm. The Bible tells us that his gene pool was uncontaminated. So God had this rescue mission to wipe out every living thing. That's why I've seen college pastors on their first day of college, and they are atheists, and they'll come in and say, so if you're a Christian, raise your hand. So I'm there, and I'm like, okay. And then, so explain to me why God is a genocidal maniac while he would order the Jews to go in and kill women and children. Well, if you don't have, if you're not a conspiracy theorist kook nutjob like I am, then when you read the Bible, you're going to naturalize it into some naturalistic mindset. It's not. It's a crazy supernatural book. And what they said in Genesis 6 is real. And these giants gave birth to these women. And then that whole thing went through the whole population. And that's why God killed them. They weren't human. They were monsters. Demonic, sure. Homosexuals, monsters, because Steve Quayle researched this, and in all the civilizations of all history have massive writings about giants. And what they told them was that these giants preferred the company of their own sex, and they were demonically wicked. They would eat people, and it was just it's unbelievable what they've covered up.
But well, there certainly is a lot of stories of cannibalism relative to the giants. Yeah. I often wonder who's telling which side of the story relative to the giants, because they're not around anymore to tell their side of the story.
Well, we do get a backstory filled in from the Book of Enoch. He gives us a lot more detail where the 200 came down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I'm vaguely familiar with some of that stuff. Book of Enoch is one of the removed chapters mm-hmm. of the Bible, right?
Yep.
From the Council of Nicaea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't like that one too much.
So what do you think the reason was to remove that from the Bible?
Well,
to hide this story of the giants?
Yeah, it basically, you know, if that's true, if the canon was not totally on the up and up, which I'm leaning towards, then they didn't allow Enoch because it spoke a lot about the last days. Like the first statement in the Book of Enoch, chapter 1, verse 1, Enoch, this is not for you. This is for the people that will live in the last days.
Okay.
So they didn't want us having that manual to understand what's going on. So, for instance, talking about the Mandela effect, Enoch chapter 80, Enoch verse 3, he says, in that day, which is 2024, all things on the earth will alter and be out of their time.
Mm.
So Enoch describes the Mandela effect to the T. Then in the same chapter, a couple of verses later, he says all of the fruits of the earth will be backwards. Now, if you look at bananas, most people remember bananas, a bunch of bananas growing down.
Mm-hmm.
Now they point up, growing up. All the fruits of the earth.
What are you talking about? They point up. They don't hang from a tree.
Pull up a bunch of bananas. Can you pull up a
yeah.
Google
they don't
images?
Hang from a tree anymore.
Well, no, the bunches of bananas hang from the tree. But if you look at them, they're growing up. They're pointing up. They're not pointing down.
That's not how I'm picturing them at all, but I see what you're saying.
It looks weird, doesn't it?
It looks super weird.
Well, what's really crazy is Enoch called it. The other thing in that same chapter.
This is not how I remember bananas growing.
No. No, indeed. He said the moon will be out of its order as well. Now,
interesting.
If you look at NASA, their chart of the phases of the moon, when it's a crescent, it's either on the west side or the east side.
Mm-hmm.
You can go see this. I got pictures of it myself. The moon is now crescenting on the bottom.
Yep. I've seen that. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I pay a lot of attention. Been a long fan of astronomy. I pay a lot of attention to the sky.
So that's that Enoch called that one too, all in the same chapter.
Interesting.
Yeah, baby. And he talks a lot about too the what we interpret is what they're doing with chemtrails, because it's full of aluminum particulate and it's making the soil incapable of producing anything unless you buy Bill Gates's patented GMO seeds,
right,
which are designed to grow in highly illuminated soil. There's a reference to that in that same chapter.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, that's why I think Enoch was like censored, because they don't want us being able to figure out what's going on.
Sure.
And try
so speaking survive. Speaking of, if Enoch predicted these things, right, whatever, what do we have an estimation of when Enoch was written, the Book of Enoch? Does it give a date in there? Does it give references?
Well, Enoch was a patriarch in the Bible. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it talks about him in the Book of Genesis.
Sure.
And it says Enoch walked with God and then was not, which is a pretty cool statement. You know, he was raptured, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Elijah were the only two guys that never tasted death. Other than that, I guess he was pre-flood, so it was pretty early on. If he wrote his book, it was way back then.
So if there's a book written back then that's so prophetic to our current times, what does that speak to in regards to the simulation?
All right. Well,
cycle.
Well, if you decide that the scriptures are accurate, in other words, they're inspired, they weren't written by men, they were written by God through men. Then you have to reconcile what the book is telling you about this realm, life after death. All those things have to line up with whatever you're trying to get out of a simulation theory.
So you're saying basically the information is coming from outside of space and time. So
yes.
Is it irrelevant of when the book was written to when the events are
right? How could you explain the mathematics proves the Holy Scriptures? You can't.
Right.
It's not subjective. Okay, so for instance, if you flip a coin, you have a 50-50 chance of it coming up heads.
That's what they claim.
There's no, if you roll a die, you have a 1 in 6 chance of rolling a 1.
Sure.
There's no room for conjecture, okay? So mm-hmm. when this guy did these, he found these codes, it's absolutely certain numbers he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You have a 1 in 7 chance of this word being divisible by 7 or so, whatever that number is. It's mm-hmm. not subjective. And when you look at them, you know, one passage of two verses having 20 different features where they're all divisible by 7, and there's 42,000 pages of these, it took them 50 years to find them all, you cry uncle. You're like, okay, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
This is it's hundreds of quintillion to one for just one of them. So if you have 42,000 pages of it, that even exacerbates it even more. It's off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolute proof that the Bible was not written by men. So now what are you going to do? Because what the Bible tells you is that this whatever simulation you think you're living in is irrelevant. Because all the simulation theory is an escape route to deny God, that mm-hmm. you don't want God ruling over you.
But
I don't want – I actually like having a God that's greater than me. It's like I can't really have a relationship with a consciousness cloud. A consciousness cloud doesn't love me. I can't offend the consciousness cloud.
Right. Plus, Amazon's going to buy it out anyway, so you
don't have to worry about that. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. And so I am a finite being. A bullet can take me out. Boom. I'm very vulnerable. I need God. I'm reliant. All of this macho kind of Pharaoh said, I will not have this God ruling over me. Okay, let me hold the door for you, bro, because we're gonna you're going to take a one last breath someday, and I've watched people die.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's not pretty, and you're going to start wishing that you'd humbled yourself under your creator. Because think about how you were created in the womb. Come on. Your start is one cell, and then you split to two. Then you split, two becomes four. Four becomes eight. And at some point, somewhere around week one or two, you know what happens? All of a sudden, the cells start to differentiate automatically. Mm-hmm. So now, instead of it splitting into just another cell that's the same, oh, this one's going to be a fingernail, and it starts migrating up towards where the fingers are going to be.
Sure.
And then, oh, this one's going to be an earlobe cell. Well, that one goes this way, and it goes up. Come on. You think that's like freaking like some – you're the result of some biological organic process?
Yeah, I mean, I often wonder how some people reason that in their head. The folks that are the non-biblical worldview folks you were talking about, like, how do they come to a conclusion of how that even works? Like, I'm assuming they don't come to a conclusion, and they don't have the depth of understanding or intelligence in which to reach that conclusion. They're like, that none of that makes sense. But then, as you point out, a lot of these atheists are very intelligent people. Like, I often wonder how very intelligent people try to make sense of what you just described, the process of the division of cells and the dissemination of the cells and the proper placement. And, you know, very intelligent people come to some really weird.
Well, I'll tell you what they do. I've watched them do it. They basically have this mental assent that, well, they trust science, and they say, well, someday we'll know.
Right.
That's where they leap off. They right. admit they don't know, and it seems impossible, but that's just because we haven't developed our scientific knowledge enough yet.
So basically they conclude, I know I'm a fool, but one day in the future I'll be less foolish.
Yeah. And so my response is, you know, I understand the reluctance. Like, if Jesus was a whoremonger and he cursed and he was a thief and he was a drunkard and he offered you eternal life, men would close with him. They'd be like, I'll take that deal. But because he's also holy and he's not the president of heaven, he's the king. Mm-hmm. He runs this kingdom as a king. So this is not like, you know, he's your buddy. He's the creator of the freaking universe, if I can say it that way. He's not your little buddy that's going to help you go to heaven. He's this awesome being of infinite power and knowledge, which can't be fathomed. And he's holy. So what happens is you have to sell everything to buy the field, which has the pearl of great price.
Mm-hmm.
So salvation is free, but it costs you everything because you have to give up masturbating and cursing and stealing and resenting your mother, who's a drunk like mine was, and my father was a drunk. I have to forgive my wife, who basically broke up our family because she wanted to preserve her worldview. She told me, I don't want to be married to you. We're in two different worlds. When I found out the moon landing is fake, okay? 9/11's fake, and I
went on a similar journey with my ex, so I know exactly what you mean there.
You can't have unforgiveness, dear soul, and go to heaven. So you have to repent of all of this. It's all bosom sins. They're really lodged deep in your heart, and you don't like that. I want to keep drinking and smoking and screwing. I like screwing people, you know, girls or whatever. Okay, I get it. Okay, however, I've watched people die. And then you get to that last moment when you're about to launch out into the endless sea of eternity, everything kind of changes, man. All your perspectives just shift immediately to, oh, I should have changed my ways. We've all seen that where the guy's like drowning or he's backed into an alley and he's like, God, if you get me out of this, I'll serve you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, well, I've spent a number of years in combat. I know precisely what you mean.
Well, Thank you.
In fact, I had a resurgence of God in my life in the middle of combat. So I have a very solid understanding of what you're talking about.
We don't think about the day of our death much. It's too awful.
Well, not until it almost happens, you know.
Right. So, and
for example, if I didn't duck at a very specific time, and I don't wear it anymore, but I have a round that I ducked and was able to magically, or, you know, thanks to God's help, dodge.
Really?
And, I grabbed the round and put it on my dog chains, bore a hole through the end of it and put on my dog chains as a reminder to myself that I have no idea what goes on in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that if it wasn't for someone's intervention at the time, I don't think I was really willing to call it God, but when for God's intervention, I wouldn't be having this conversation or a lot of other conversations.
Right. I think there was a few times when I almost died, and God has a plan for us. He's got a job for us. He's got a relationship to have with us. It's what makes life worth living. I mean, without him, what is life? You wake up, you eat something, you go to the bathroom, do a bunch of stuff, you go to bed. You wake up the next day, you eat something, you go to the bathroom, do a bunch of stuff, you go to bed. You do that a whole bunch of times in a row and then die. Well, come on. What is life without him?
Well, some people aren't. You know, like I said, it's been 13 years that I changed my worldview on that matter. But yeah, I mean, prior to that, I could see myself just getting up, going to do my daily routines, and, you know, going back to bed the next, and doing it all again the next day without really any consideration of a larger purpose in the whole situation.
A lot of people, when they really meet Jesus, because understand, you can't know God without Jesus.
Sure.
It's a package deal. Jesus said, "No man comes to the Father except through me." So he's the one that actually came down and he took the pain and the punishment that you deserve on himself. So he's like your go-between. That's the deal. That's the offer. Mm-hmm. And so let's say you die and you go up before God and you blew Jesus off. You're like, "I don't want him in my life. I'm happy." Right. So now you broke the Ten Commandments, right? Because you stole a paperclip. You've lied. So you're a thief and a liar, right? So if you're a thief and a liar, you got to pay for your own sins, and you've sinned against an infinitely holy God who's infinite, so your payment is infinite, so you go apart from him forever. I, or people who have bowed their knee to Jesus to accept his gift, are there at the same judgment, but now next to me is Jesus. Mm-hmm. And God says to me, "Why should I let you into holy heaven?" And I'm just like, "This guy over here, please." And he's like, "Good answer." And that's it.
Nice.
You just get in because of him. And, you know, I've thought about this. Like, if I had a girlfriend and I got a 2x4 in my hand, and I say, "If you don't love me, I'm going to bash you right in the head with this 2x4.
Yeah.
I've had that conversation with God, too.
Sounds a bit aggressive.
Well, essentially, you could make the case that we're under duress with God.
Yeah.
We have to love him or else he's going to kick our ass into heaven.
Yeah, well, I guess that is one outlook of the matter.
That's kind of a pinch, man. So I'm like, I've created this box in my head, okay? And it's the box where I don't understand how God runs his universe.
Right. Oh, I lost you.
Perpetrators, they're a hippie assholes. And two of them burst through the front door there, and the guy hippie said he was the devil, and he said, "I'm here to do some devil shit." That's not verbatim, but...
I've enjoyed a number of your examples of the Mandela effect relative to Bible verses. Perhaps you can share some of those, because I think some of those are extremely indicative of a much larger mysterious situation going on with this Mandela effect and the, you know, simulation stuff, is just generally speaking. Because I think Mandela effect, I think perhaps you would agree with me. I believe you made the statement before, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Mandela effect is evidence of, or is exhibiting elements of the simulation theory or simulation aspects of our universe, meaning the two are codependent on one another.
No, that the Mandela effect is one of the evidences that are pointed to to suggest that we're in a simulation. But the Mandela effect doesn't prove we're in a simulation, because what the
proving something in evidence of are kind of separate.
Okay,
as well.
it indicates that we're in a simulation.
That's a better term.
But the simulation idea is just that there's the realm that you're in has rules.
Right.
That's all it means.
So then what's causing the Mandela effect then, in your opinion? Because something's changing these rules, right? Like, or at least one of the rules is things can get changed, right?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So what we know is what we're experiencing is not misremembering. Anybody that suggests that is a Hail Mary superficial attempt to try to dismiss the testimonies of millions of people.
And one example I like to give is, you know, when people claim it's misremembering things, and I mean, I know the Berenstain Bears is a good one for a lot of folks, but one example I like to give that is instilled in the minds of at least men my age, I'm 42, and you know, around my generation, around my age, I think I'm probably even in you're slightly older than me, I believe, John, but probably even in your mind, you can remember the event I'm about to describe, although it's not a very biblical example. But Britney Spears' first music video, she wore a miniskirt dressed as a Catholic schoolgirl. That is now a black miniskirt, even though when she reenacted that same scene years later, she wore the plaid miniskirt that everyone remembers.
Right. So these are the type of
very
events,
iconic image for a lot of men my age, you know, mid-90s and whatnot. So.
Right. So those are the type of things where people have really high level of certainty. And so here's a concept for those that don't believe. They just think this is total nonsense. Okay, so what you can't deny is that there are now millions of people, because you have thousands of platforms on YouTube and other platforms. And some of these channels have hundreds of thousands of subscribers each.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a huge, absolutely.
It's about 300,000 searches a day on YouTube for the term. So this is not a few crazy people in the mom's basement, and it's being amplified by the internet.
Probably a significant number of those folks don't feel comfortable discussing it with people they know.
Perhaps.
Part of the persecution of the truther.
All right. So whatever side of this you fall on, what you can't deny is that there's millions of people all suddenly claiming that things that they vividly remember, like your name, okay,
right,
have now changed so that they're not the same as how they remember it. So the Monopoly guy doesn't have a monocle.
Come on. You know? I haven't heard that one yet. That's ridiculous. No.
Or mirror, mirror on the wall never existed. Mirror, mirror on the wall. It's always been magic mirror on the wall. And you say, oh, well, I can clear this up, John. You're just misremembering. Okay. So this is what I need you to explain to me. How you tell me how millions of people are all suddenly smitten with being, you know, befuddled.
Mm-hmm.
We're all of a sudden claiming that not one or two things, this is hundreds of things in multiple categories.
Yeah, large spectrum, very wide spectrum.
How do you explain that?
Yeah.
Because never in recorded history has it ever been recorded where millions of people were suddenly stricken with mental illness all the same way. And the problem is
And it's not co-located, though, if I may interject. It's not what I was saying when it's wide spectrum, not just the subject matter, but the people that are asking these questions. It's not co-located to one demographic, one country. No. This is around the world.
Around the world.
Around the world.
And this is the real stumper. We're all misremembering the same way.
Exactly.
Which is really takes it to the next level. Because if you have if you have like 10 people that see a car accident and it's a blue car and a red car, okay, what sociologists have proven is that if the group of people misremember the color of the car the same way, above about 10%, it becomes anomaly. So in other words,
interesting.
If 50% of the people remember a red car, but it was really a blue car, but they all remember it being red.
That's off the charts.
That's well, okay. So there was a guy that early on, he was a sociologist, and he did an online survey with about 20 Mandela effect questions.
Okay.
So, and he had a large sample. It was 25,000 people, respondents. And he asked them, fill in the blank. Blank, blank on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all?
Mm-hmm.
And 92% said mirror, mirror.
Shit. Okay. I would have said mirror, mirror. Yeah, I would have said that.
So how can 90% all be misremembering the same way. Because if they were just misremembering, one would say, you know, frothy mirror. One would say silver mirror. But they all said the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was never in any of the movies. It didn't. It wasn't mirror, mirror, and then they changed it either. You haven't done your homework. It's always been magic mirror. So he had 20 of those. And they were all around the same numbers, 60, 70, 80, 90%, all misremembering and all misremembering the same way. So those are the types of evidences that we see. Now, what you then have to admit is, okay, well, that's unexplainable.
Sure. I feel like some sociologists had some meltdowns over that kind of number. Of
10%
was their threshold, and they hit it 92%. Like, they had some meltdowns over that one, I feel like.
Yep. So what you can't say in one breath that there's a phenomenon happening, and in the next breath tell us all that we're just misremembering. You have to pick one model.
Yeah, it seems pretty mutually exclusive.
Yes, it is. So now I can tell you what it's like. You wake up tomorrow and your name is Joe. Your name is Joe, and you wake up tomorrow and your name is Jim, okay? And you check your bank statements. Your bank statements, your credit cards, your birth certificate all say Jim. Now, you go to the doctor, he checks you out. You have no mental illness. You're not on alcohol or drugs, and there's nobody playing a scam on you. There's nothing going on. What conclusion are you going to draw?
Exactly.
You'd have to believe, because could you admit that you could possibly be just misremembering about what your name is? No.
No, not at all.
So what that means is if you agree with that, then that means that you believe that the human memory is so reliable when it comes to vivid memories that you would pick the reliability of your memory over the data sphere telling you that your name was Jim all these years. You were just mistaken. You're like, I don't care what the data sphere says. I know my name, bro.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
All right, so now, the next response I get, though, well, John, your ability to remember your name is different than, you know, the Monopoly guy having a monocle because of blah, blah, blah. Well, I actually researched that. What causes a memory to be vivid? And actually, the number of times it's repeated was the third reason contributor. It's actually the emotional state that you were in at the time the memory was created was the number one reason for it being vivid.
Sure.
Ha ha. So if I have a memory when I was 10 of going camping, I can picture the camp, the tent we had. It had yellow and green stripes. And around the same time when I was 10, I remember going to camp way on it, and I can picture the cabin. Okay, so JJ, you tell me, you have to guess which one of those of my memories is most vivid. Can you tell me that?
Well, I'm assuming the name.
Well, you can't. There's no way that you know.
Right.
My memories is vivid.
As far as emotional attachments, I mean, you don't get any more emotionally attached to something as your name. You know what I mean?
Perhaps, but what I'm saying is, like, 1 Corinthians chapter 2 says, no one knows the spirit of a man except the man. So no one can say, well, that's, you know, you can't say that's your name. Yes, I can. I absolutely can. I played Monopoly so many times when I was a kid. We wore the game out. We had to buy new games because the board was disintegrating.
Sure.
Okay, and I researched it, and there was four different versions of Monopoly. Mr. Moneybags was the first one. Then there was three other, and there was never a monocle. So somehow,
that's wild.
Somehow in this time stream that I'm in, because whatever journey I've been on since birth, my journey included the guy had a monocle. So going back, whatever. Now I've either shifted to a different universe where so I have shifted to another parallel universe somehow through this system or whatever.
Inconclusive at this point, whether or not how that occurred, right?
We don't know.
What I'm getting at is that's not like the likely scenario. You're not likely shifting to another universe, right?
Yeah, it's as unlikely as the next one, though, where my reality is changing, because what's changing is not just the reality, it's the time. It's the history. So in other words, the Monopoly guy didn't have a monocle 20 years ago, and then after 20 years later, he doesn't. It's going all the way back to the beginning. So
something's altering this in the past.
Yeah, it's the something
present and the future.
Right, which, you know, it's like the subject of 100 movies where the guy goes back in time, he changes something, and then all of a sudden you're looking at the picture and the person next to you is fading away. So because
classic Back to the Future scene.
Exactly. And so, you know, we're actually experiencing this is really happening now. And my thing, because I'm coming from ministry, worldview and all that, is the things that are changing in our reality includes the Bible, which is a huge bummer. So, and I'm not winning any popularity contests. So let me give you a couple examples.
I can imagine that. Yeah, I can imagine that ruffles some feathers within the Bible community.
All right, so I got two different versions. One's King James only, one's Universal, which is in all translations. But these are so familiar. Everybody will remember these. Judge not, blanky be judged. If you were lest, to just,
lest ye be judged.
All right, so say the whole thing.
Judge not, lest ye be judged.
Right, that's Matthew 7:1. And what just came out of your mouth would come out of the mouth of basically everybody in the world that has ever heard the Bible or whatever.
92% of surveyed.
Judge not, lest you be judged has never existed.
Get out of here.
In the King James Bible. And then we're going back to the 1611 Cambridge and the five different revisions. So it's not a modernization issue.
And I've only ever read the King James Bible. I've never, that's the official Mormon Bible. So that's when I went to Mormon seminary school. We studied the King James Bible. So I am a graduate of that. And it's like Mormon high school. You know, you go there during your high school years. I graduated. I had a great comprehension of it. Graduated in 3 years. It's a 4-year program.
All right.
So when you tell me that these lines were never in the Bible, I'm like, no, I definitely read that though, John. Like I remember reading that line in the King James Bible specifically.
What it says now, or what it's always said, is judge not that ye be not judged.
Oh, that doesn't even sound right.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't even remotely sound right.
And we're not confusing it with another translation. It's not a modernization because it doesn't appear in any translation. So. Mm-hmm. What you then have to do is you have to explain to us how judge not lest you be judged has gotten into the memories of, I don't know, billions of people.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
We're all misremembering it the same way. Right. So somehow there was an influence on us getting us to misremember it. Now, this is what I've been told when
I've confronted that's a good way to put it.
Influence, church leaders, pastors who are content experts, the intelligentsia of the body of Christ. How is that possible? These are the two things I've been told. Buckle your seatbelt. The first one is, well, John, I can clear this up for you. Those are just misquotes from pop culture.
Oh, okay. That's a good response, sure.
Okay, well, let's drill down on that beauty for a second.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're a Bible believer like I am, then you have a daily devotional that you read, like Oswald Chambers, that has a scripture for the day in it. So it's going to pop up on occasion. Then you've got, because it's not one scripture, it's hundreds, right? Mm-hmm. So I have these influences that are going to reinforce what I remember that are my daily devotional, my Bible reading, the things that I listen to. I listen to people talk about the Bible. I go to church and listen to the guy preach from the Bible. What I learned in children's church. And then think about this. The Bible is pretty much one of the only books that people ever commit to memory.
Sure.
All right. So I've got 8 different influences that are compounded week after month after year after 4 decades. Now, what I'm being asked to believe is that some unknown named source, like I'll say, well, it's a misquote from pop culture. Where?
Yeah, which event in pop culture?
Who misquoted? I don't know.
Yeah.
What outlets repeated it enough to overcome all of those influences that I have and everybody in the world has had?
Yeah, to influence billions of people.
No. That's no sale. No sale, thank you.
Right.
Okay, the other similar response that I've gotten mostly from otherwise really intelligent men of God is, well, John, I can clear this up for you. somebody must have misquoted it somewhere along the line in a sermon, and it just went through the world like the telephone game. That's how they'll kind of come at me like sheepishly. They'll be like, "Well, have you ever heard of the telephone game?" I'm like,
right.
"You're not going to go there, are you? Really? That's what you got?"
It's a weak argument.
Let me give you another one. This is Job chapter 1. Job's wife is haranguing him for, you know, not holding God in derision or whatever. And his response is, you know, God does stuff and he does other stuff. So the Lord blank and the Lord blanks away.
The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Say it again, baby.
The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
That what just came out of your mouth has never existed.
Come on.
In any Bible. If that does not knock you off your chair, then I don't think you could fog a mirror.
Yeah, that's a pretty common quote from the Bible, and one I specifically remember reading.
The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away is what it has always said in every Bible translation. You can go up into Grandma's Gutenberg in the attic, okay? And it's going to say the Lord gave. In the King James Bible, bro.
I'm not buying it.
Open it up. Open it up. Look it up. Go.
Oh, I will. I'm just saying, like, in my head, there's no way you can convince me that that's what I read. Like, that's never going to happen.
Hey, in the book of Isaiah, it talks about the millennial reign and something will lay down with the lamb. What laid down with the lamb?
The lion.
Isaiah 11:6. Do you know what it says now?
No.
The wolf.
Come on. There's no Isaiah 11:6. There's no wolf in that story.
Isaiah 11:6, girl, says wolf. I've done that with about 30 pastors now, and every single one of them's just like you just did. You didn't even have to struggle.
No, I remember that.
It was like self-evident. Oh, the lion. No, it was the wolf that laid down with the lamb now. And this is what the weird part is. They go to it, and they look it up, and they go, and the wolf, like they stumble over, right? And now I had a couple of guys do what we call the
like downvote. They're reading it subconsciously. They're understanding like this is not what it's supposed to say. And they're stumbling to say it.
They're freaked out.
Yeah, I get it.
But then they go like this. This one pastor, I'll never forget it. He reads the wolf and then he looks up at me and his head kind of tilts to the right. And he kind of got glassy eyed. And then it was like in the Matrix when the guy in the subway station turned into Agent Smith. Like shake. I mean, he didn't shake, but he just acted weird. And then he goes,
it's like a epileptic seizure looking event. Yeah.
He was getting the download and he goes, oh, you know what? Now that I mention it, I do remember it being wolf.
Nice.
Oh, man, that freaked me out, bro.
I could see. Yeah, that would be a creepy occurrence for sure. Well, that kind of gets to my point. If I may, these are great examples, John. I think we could probably go for, sounds like you had a long list and I would probably, you know, pass your test and every one of giving you the wrong answer. But when you bring in these ideas of influence and this kind of download, like Agent Smith style download, like what do you think is the influence that's impacting these events and these chapters and verses from the Bible and changing them? What do you think causes it to be retroactive?
Well, Amos chapter 8, verse 11 tells us God said he was going to send a famine, but not a famine of the bread. It'll be a famine of the word. And men will seek the word, but they will not be able to find it. They'll travel north and south, east and west, and they will not find the word. So this has been foretold. Now, God's not doing it. He's the one that spoke that it would happen, but he allows these things to go through the utility or the agency of the devil. So Revelation 13, we see that God says that he's given power and authority to wage war against the saints and prevail against them. And in Daniel 7:25, speaking of the Antichrist in the last days, it says he, the Antichrist, will seek to change times and laws.
Well, that, interesting.
That one pretty much nails it. Because the word
that would be
times,
a good description of the Mandela effect, yeah.
It's not calendars. Times is space-time. And the word laws is translated the law of God in Ezra 7. So it is a fair interpretation to interpret that as that he will seek to change space-time in the Bible.
Interesting. So the influence, the triggering event, the impetus behind these things, obviously God's the overarching influence, but the impetus or triggering event of these end times, as you put it, is simply what? Is this the result of a cyclical nature of time? Is this the result of?
No, it's an orchestrated attack to overthrow God and become God. That's what the devil wants. Because in Isaiah 14, we have the five eyes, where we overhear Satan talking to himself in front of the mirror. And he's saying, I will be like the Most High. I will ascend to the hills of the north. I will walk among the stones of fire. He wants to overthrow God. He's crazy. And so this is the plan in the last days, is to, basically scramble the scriptures so that men will be without direction and discipleship and be able to get to God as easily. And then he can basically set up whatever kind of message he wants, because now what's presenting itself in the scripture is brazen sexual innuendo. People drinking their own piss, eating their own dung. Jesus is spitting in people's faces to heal them in Matthew 8:23.
Wait a second. What? This is going on in Matthew now?
Matthew 8:23. Do you remember when Jesus made mud from his spit?
Sure.
And healed the blind man? Well, now Mark 8:23 says, and he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. So now you got Jesus spitting in people's faces. Leviticus 12:8, you can sacrifice turtles to God. And then in Leviticus 4:32, if he brings a lamb as his sin offering, he shall bring a female without blemish. That's very unfamiliar and bizarre. Mm-hmm. That there's female sheep being offered in the Old Testament.
Sure.
Revelation 1:13.
Anomaly.
Son of man, clothed with a garment down to the foot and girt about with the paps. That word is mastos, which is female breasts, not stethos, which is male breast.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus is now pictured as having female breasts, which is Baphomet, half man, half woman.
Yeah.
Jesus is touching infants, not children, not blessing children. Bring the children so that he can bless them. No, bring infants, babies, so that he can touch them. There's female angels in Zechariah 5:9, or at least women with wings flying around with the ephod. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, a lot of these examples are extremely bizarre you're rolling out here.
The term Holy of Holies does not appear anywhere in the King James Bible. The word Messiah does not appear in the
Messiah nor Holy of Holies appear in the King James Bible?
Correct.
So you're what you're kind of getting at here is the end of times has triggered Satan to make these changes to the Bible in which to confuse man, is what you're is more or less your meta theory here.
It's a judgment to redeem us back to God, because when Jesus came on the scene, there were Pharisees. They were learned dudes and they were devout, but they didn't get along very well with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because they had exchanged head knowledge for a relationship with this living God. Well, what a lot of us have done is the same thing, right? Because we've kept our sins, but we've continued to go to church and go to the Bible study, and we're busy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Filling our heads with knowledge. And then our thinking is like this: hey, God knows I'm in the game. I'm listening to Christian music on the way to work, right? But I'm living with a chick that's not my wife, or mm-hmm. I'm gay, or I'm drunk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know your life is not in line with this God, but you're still engaged in Christian activities, and you've deceived yourself thinking that that's sufficient to make yourself ready for your last breath to come out of you,
mm-hmm.
to go to the place where there's saints. You have to be a saint. You can't get to heaven living like the devil. You can't drink the cup of devils and the cup of the Lord. That's what the Bible says. I'm sorry. Salvation is free. I get that. Ephesians 2:8, we are saved by grace through faith. It is not of works, lest any man shall boast. It's the gift of God. But that doesn't mean the thief on the cross died right after he got saved. He didn't do anything. He was just like, hey, remember me when you go in your kingdom. Bam. And then he died. Well, what happens if you do that? You get born again, but then you have to live for another 20 years. That's the narrow road and the small gate. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many are those who enter there. But the gate is small and the way is narrow.
Mm.
The way is your walk.
Sure.
It's full of obstructions. And so if you accept this gift of eternal life, but you don't cast off the things that are displeasing to this holy God, you don't get in.
No.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
And it makes, I mean, that is what the Bible teaches right there, yeah.
You can't get around it, man. I got stuff in my life that I'm...
Everyone's looking for that cheat code, John. Everyone's looking to, everyone, and if anyone wants to be objectively real about the situation, everyone lies to themselves about something to some degrees larger than others and, more frequency than others, but nonetheless, it occurs within us all. And, I think there is a lot of people that want to, as you put it, pretend they're living these values when they know very well they're not.
No question.
I think the times that we're currently experiencing are causing people to face those questions internally to themselves, right? Like to really give themselves an audit, right? Give their lives an audit. I think that's what's being forced here through these times that we're describing here with these various changes to the universe and confusions and whatnot. What are you tracking on here in the future? What do you expect in the future and along these same lines of the Mandela effect? Do you expect these there be even more significant alterations to things such as the Bible and other aspects of our universe?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be slowing down at all.
No, I would agree with you there.
2024, I think we're going to see a lot of really good, incredible things, like high-level revelations, as well as a lot of really bad things. Like the wheels are coming off the wagon this year, I don't think. I'll see things just rolling on like it's been. And so...
I say the same thing. I always say the train has left the tracks. Like, you're not getting that train back on the tracks,
So I got a hard stop coming up. I'm going to have to pull out of here.
No worries. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, man. This was awesome.
I really appreciate you joining me here to get a little GCD here in Operation GCD. And I like where your research and your studies go. And I'll be looking forward to having a future conversation. If you will come back and join me here for another one in the future.
No question. Excellent. We'll stay in touch. And folks can find the book on just about every platform now, but Amazon, of course, has it, and Barnes & Noble, it's all, on all the platforms. It's in paperback and audio, and it's called The Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide. It's a guidebook for persecuted truthers. So if you're trying to walk through this thing and your friends, your family don't know and don't want to know, and they're trying to shut you up, this book is birthed out of my journey where, my wife basically asked me to leave after 24 years of marriage, and my kids... we're in touch, but it's strained. And this is something that's helping a lot of people.
No, I agree. I was a good read, and I've ventured down. Unfortunately or fortunately, I guess at some point in the future, I might call it fortunately. I kind of got to that point now. But yeah, I've ventured down a similar journey in life regarding my ex-wife and child as well. So it's a tough journey when you're, as I like the way you put it, when you're a truther or a conspiracy theorist, you're dealing with the matter of ethics, ethical challenges. You either realize and acknowledge that you read that Bible verse correctly and you know it correctly in your head, or you believe the people telling you it's differently, or your Joe and Jim example. You believe that, the world's telling you your name is different than what it is when you know inside that your name is what it is. I think that's, good examples of the ethical kind of journey and battle that folks go on that you've captured in your book, The Conspiracy Theorist Survival Guide. So, and I'll put a link in the show notes for
cool. Reason. Yeah. Folks can find my websites, wakeuporelse.com. And then my YouTube channel is also Wake Up or Else, one word. And we cover a lot of the journey of the truth on the channel. So you can get other, videos. There's like 100 videos I've done over the last 7 years.
Nice. Well, I'll definitely include those as well, John. And thanks again for joining me here today. And look forward to talking to you again soon. See where you're at with your future research.
Awesome, man. Appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you soon, my friend. Take care.
Absolutely. Out here. All right.
Well, that's it. That's the show here, folks. So the next time you're out on the town, visiting your local watering holes, or perhaps just meandering around, and you hear the unmistakable sounds of metal clanking, and you spot signs of a disturbance, well, check your six. Look in that garbage can, because you never can tell. The GCDs may be loose in your town.